to Women Wanting Women, where we explore topics that matter to women like us. We talk about being a woman, attracting women, and becoming more powerful women by developing more self-confidence and always reaching for the next level in our self-actualization. I'm your hostess, lesbian love coach Jordana Michelle. And if you're interested in finally finding the woman of your dreams, so you can be best friends who learn and grow together, share dreams together, have adventures together, and share passion and intimacy together, then also check out my website, womenwantingwomen.com, because it's packed with free resources that can help you. For example, there are free quizzes you can take, including one that will tell you what might be standing in your way of finding love, and another that will tell you what qualities the woman of your dreams will find most attractive about you when you meet her. There are free video tutorials you can watch that explain why women do the things they do and how you can navigate the frustrating world of lesbian dating with confidence, even if you're feeling lonely and desperate. There are free guides you can download to learn the secrets of how to avoid rejection, heal from lesbian heartbreak, and find epic lesbian love. And there's a free matchmaking survey you can fill out in case I already know the woman of your dreams. All of that is available now on womenwantingwomen.com. And if you want lesbian dating advice from me more often, follow me on Instagram at jordana.michelle. But before we go any further, I have a question. Where in the world can you be of best use? And is whatever you're doing in life right now serving you on your journey to becoming the person you want to be? Well, on this episode of Women Wanting Women, I talk about all that and more with District Attorney Satana DeBerry, a lesbian mother of three women who's currently running to be the Attorney General for the state of North Carolina. You can learn more about District Attorney DeBerry and support her campaign at satanadeberry4nc.com. But before you do, stay tuned for all the wisdom and great advice she shares with us here. District Attorney DeBerry, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, I'm glad to be here. I have a lot of questions for you, but let's just do some personal questions first before diving in. Did you know a lot of other LGBT people in your life when you discovered you were a part of our community?
Did I know a lot of people? Let's say yes and no. Right? You always look back in your life and you go, oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And what was it like? Was being out different for that time?
I think for me, I was always, I'm a bit of a nerd. And so I was a nerdy kid. And I always knew there was something different about me, but I thought it was that I was just kind of a nerdy kid and that maybe I liked school a little too much or something. And it wasn't until I really kind of became aware of, you know, I was just always trying to, I was very much about, one, getting out of my small town, two, doing well in school. And so it wasn't until I didn't have a goal in front of me that I had to look around and think, oh, I got to have a life now. And what's that life going to look like? And that's when really the coming out process started for me.
Yeah. And speaking of being a nerd, I read that as a kid, you were in a school for gifted children. How old were you when you got brought into that world?
I wasn't in a school for gifted children. I was in a program. I was in regular school, but I was kind of tracked out into a gifted program.
How was that in terms of relating to the other people you had grown up with before? So it was just a program. So you didn't have to go to a different school,
no,
but.
I didn't go to a different school, but I went to different classes in school. And I mean, that was different. There were other kids, but I was certainly not in. There were a lot of relationships that I didn't build as a kid that I had to build as an adult because they were just kids I didn't see every day in school. So,
is it because you were so focused, would you say?
I would say it was not just because I was focused, which I was, but I was also just in special classes. And a lot of the kids in the special classes, you know, given that I grew up in the rural South, weren't other Black kids. So there were very few of us in those classes. And so probably my social group looked a little different than it might have otherwise.
And then later you were able to make the relationships with people you related to more, would you say?
Yeah, I think as a young adult and as an adult, I have been able to kind of more seamlessly, I think, mix the culture, like queer culture and Black culture and being a woman, and kind of I've done a better job of making all of those part of who I am.
Yeah, that's awesome. And speaking of who you are, you have an incredible story of your career and your rise to getting elected as a district attorney. Can you tell the history of how you came to be where you are right now?
Oh, wow. I don't actually know how I came to be where I am now, Jordana. I was just talking to a group of law students, and the thing that I was telling them was that they should remain curious about their own careers. And that when I was them sitting in that space, I couldn't have told you that I would be where I am now. But the thing that I did always try to do was be curious about what was next for me and be curious about where I could be of best use to people. And I think that is how I got here. You know, I've been practicing law now for, this is my 30th year in the practice of law. My gosh. I've been practicing law since I was a wee baby. No. And I have done a lot of things, but the through line in my career has always been that I had two things I've always been interested in. One is good policy, and two is people, and really how do we build the community that we want to live in through good, solid public policy. And at each turn, I would ask myself, is this still what you want to be doing? Does this meet those goals? And at some point, that led me to this work, to some people in my community asking me to run for this office. And, you know, I thought, there's no way people will vote for me.
Imposter syndrome or something? Why did you think that?
I don't do imposter syndrome. I think I had just been too vocal about where I stand on issues. Often politicians don't really take a stand. They try to only say enough for you to think that they stand with you. And so I'd always tried to be really clear about where I stood on issues, and certainly issues that impacted people in our community who often were the most vulnerable people. And I felt like there was just ways that I had talked about things that, you know, people would take issue with. And certainly people have. That is very true. People have taken issue with it. And I think also people want to have a more substantive conversation about what is happening in their communities. They want to vote for people that stand for something, sometimes even not what they stand for, but just somebody who will have the political courage to stand up and stand for something. So,
absolutely. I mean, if someone's just being weaselly and not actually saying what they believe, they might avoid offending someone. That doesn't mean, though, that that person just voted for someone that, you know, at least if you say what you mean, people voting for you know. I may not agree, but I know where she stands, as opposed to someone.
That's right.
Being more Weasley and not. But I love what you talked about remaining curious. And I want to dig into, how would someone know if they're remaining curious? You used a couple of questions like, is this still what you want to be doing? Does this meet the goals that I set? For someone that wants to remain curious about their career, what are some ways they can do that?
Well, I think, you know, we've all been in situations where we hated what we were doing, right? That's unfortunately one of the things that happens as an adult.
Yes, unfortunately.
Yeah. And I think the question always, you have to always be asking yourself is, does this serve you? Are you getting to be the person that you see yourself being, that you want to be? And if not, are you willing to do anything about it? Sometimes you're just not willing to do anything about it, and that's okay.
Totally.
Right? It's okay to say, I don't really love this, but it meets my needs right now. And then sometimes it doesn't meet your needs. Sometimes you're like, I don't love this. It does not meet my needs. What else can I do? And again, as an adult, you know, we get caught up in the repetition of our lives, the routine of our lives, and it can be hard to break. But there's so many benefits when we do break it, when we just do say, hey, this routine doesn't work for me anymore. Let me try to find something else to do. Change is hard, but when we change, there's a lot of, you know, satisfaction and joy in doing that.
Yeah. Routines are hard to break. And I like the forgiveness you give around the question, are you willing to do something about it? Because sometimes it's just not the time.
Yeah.
People have bills to pay and people in their lives to take care of, and it's not always possible. But having that guiding light of knowing the person you want to become and being able to at least track, are we on that path? Those are good guideposts.
The other thing I know, Jordana, is that everything changes. So even if something's going bad, it won't go bad forever.
Right.
Right? The only constant is change. And, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. So speaking of change, when you got elected to be the district attorney, was there anything you had to change inside of yourself, like to be better at managing the staff or to be good at the job there?
I think what I had to do, I had to put a lot more effort into my own mental health. There is a great deal of secondary trauma involved in the work that I do. I remind the people that work for me that often when people see us, whether those people are victims, whether they are defendants, we are often a reminder of the very worst day of their lives.
Mm.
And that does not always lend people to show up as their best selves. And so we deal with people in a lot of different phases of grief or anger. And we are also human beings who have our own issues and may also be having bad days in our lives and have things going on in our lives. And all those things conspire sometimes to knock even the healthiest person down.
Right. You could meet that victim or that defendant and yourself in the park on a beautiful day when you're not all triggered and reliving the worst thing that ever happened. And y'all could be friends and everything could be kumbaya. But all of those triggers and the intensity of it can even the most balanced person, that would be a lot to shoulder.
Yeah. Yeah. And so It has caused me to think about my own mental health and how to stay present. I have children, so how do I stay present for them and their lives? How do I not show up mad and angry? I see bad stuff a lot. And how do I not take that bad stuff on and make that my worldview too, right? Because I see so much bad stuff, how do I not think that the whole world is bad, right?
So how do you?
Well, I know the whole world's not bad. I feel like one of the great joys of being a Black woman in America is that I have seen a range of things, and I know that everybody is not just one thing and everything, that you can find joy in madness, and you can make a way out of no way, and sometimes you can just sit down and cry and, you know, that there are lots of opportunities to feel the world and do it differently, I guess.
And then What about the secondary trauma, and what are some tools for managing your mental health in this role, or people who are in a similarly tough role? What are some advice you have for that?
First thing I would say to people, if you have a tough job, if you have a job that provides, you know, you have some secondary trauma, or you just feel alone, right? Leadership is lonely. Talk about it. Whether that's, I am a big fan of therapy, because especially if you are somebody who's in a leadership position, or you very much feel like your position depends on you seeming rock solid or whatever that is. Although I think there's a lot of power in vulnerability, but that's another conversation. But I'm a big fan of therapy if you're in a leadership position or something like that, because you want to be able to talk to somebody who doesn't have any direct impact on your career or your family, or they're not going to feel upset that you said something a certain way because none of it's directed them. They don't have a dog in your fight, for lack of a better term. They're just there to help you get wherever you want to get. So I'm a big fan of that. I'm a big fan of just taking care of yourself, whatever that means to you, whether that's exercise, whether that's being with your friends, being with your family, whether that is sitting in a corner quietly, staring at said corner.
I've done a lot of that in my life. Yeah.
Yeah. It's different things at different points in your life, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so just leaning into that stuff instead of away from it. Like, it doesn't make you weak. It doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you. It just means you need to take a minute, and everybody needs to take a minute sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. Speaking of leadership being lonely and just leadership in general, what have you learned about managing staff and being a leader and having to run an office like that?
You know, I had some really good bosses in my life, and I had some really bad bosses in my life. And one of the promises that I made to myself, you know, was that I did not want to be the devil in somebody else's life, right? So I don't want anybody to ever say I was the worst boss they ever had.
Yeah.
Because that means that I didn't treat them with respect or kindness or professionalism or anything like that. And so I try to do a few things with people who work for me and in organizations in which I lead. One, I try to take seriously what they take seriously. So when people come to work for me, the first thing that I promise them is I will take their career as seriously as they take their career. If there are goals that they have for their career and they are willing to communicate those to me, they don't have to. But if they're willing to communicate those to me, I will take those on too.
I love that.
So, for example, I've had folks who have come to my office and said, hey, I want to be a judge. I said, great. Then I will put you in situations that I think will be helpful. Whether those are situations where you get certain cases, or you have certain leadership opportunities within the office or within the community where other people get to see you. Whatever, right? So that's the first promise I make to people. Second promise I make to people is that we are not first responders. And so my expectation is not that you work for me 24/7. That I try to run organizations that are human friendly. Whether that be family friendly, if you don't have a family, if you don't have kids, that you still have the opportunities to take the time off that you need. People who have kids sometimes leave it early because they got to pick up kids and they got to do whatever. If you're somebody who doesn't have kids, sometimes you get to leave early. I'm not holding you to a different standard. And hopefully everybody who works for me gets the opportunity to take what they need. Now, sometimes people, you know, might take that a little too far.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we have to have that conversation. But it's not a conversation about you did anything wrong. It's just a conversation about, hey, what are our goals here? We're trying to accomplish some things. And when you do this, we can't do that.
Yeah. So that definitely sounds like the ingredients for a good boss, especially the idea of taking their career seriously and knowing what their goals are, if they're willing to share it and putting them in positions where they can be better able to achieve those goals. Who wouldn't want a boss like that? And of course, just understanding that everyone's human. Everyone's had a boss that forgot that now and then. So that's great. Those are great pieces of advice for anyone running an office. I read that you raised 3 daughters on your own. What did you have to evolve in yourself to be the kind of mom you wanted to be? Oof.
So I had a very strong mother. Very strong father, too. My parents were both my parents were teachers. And so they had not just strong personalities, but I don't know, kind of strong management instincts, if that's a good way to talk about it. And sometimes I felt like I was in a little box and had to live within this box that they had created, right? Not in a bad way, right? They're raising Black children in a society that doesn't always value the lives of those Black children. So they want us to get to adulthood and they want us to be successful and all these things, right? And sometimes that comes at a cost to your more creative side or whatever, right? The quirky part of you. And so what I had to evolve in myself as a parent was giving some free rein to that quirky side of my kids and not defaulting to the boxes that I had been raised in. And so I was really committed to that. And now as they are young adults, I am purposefully trying to transition our relationship from parent-child to, you know, I'm still always going to be their parent. I always want them to come to me if they need help, support, advice, any of that. But I also want to move into a space where we share a friendship, right? Like a mutual respect for each other, that I'm not just relating to them as my children, that I'm relating to them as the women that they are becoming. That is, you know, that's challenging.
Yeah.
But again, I think it's going to pay benefits later on. It does mean we end up, you know, sometimes I think they are more grown than I think they are.
That's beautiful. And when anyone who has kids of their own that might be accidentally, for safety reasons or concerns, bottling them up instead of allowing that quirky, creative side, how might someone go about that to make sure that they're taking that advice?
Oof. I think the thing you always have to remember as a parent is that your children do not belong to you. And we hear that a lot. And you're not going to treat my child this way. Or you're not going to talk to me this way or talk to my child this way. Da, da, da. But they don't belong to you. Like, I forget who said that your children live in a world that you can't inhabit. Hmm. So you just have to remember that my daddy used to say that he was trying to give us the tools to live in this world without him. Mm. And I think every parent has to remember that when you're like, I want to keep him close because I want to keep him safe. But there, one day you're not going to be here. They live in the mansions of the future. And you will never be there with them. So you've got to find a way to give them what you can give them now. And if you're bottling them up and keeping them too close, you're not giving them what they need now. Also, and I think this has been important for me to learn. And both my parents died relatively young. And one of the things that I really miss is their friendship, right? Is getting to know more about them. Mm. And one of the things I think is so important is to give your kids the gift of you. Like, let them see you. Mm. Let them have the opportunity to see you as a person, whatever that means in the full range of your personhood, right? Like, my feelings get hurt. I'm sometimes down. I don't, you know, you don't want to do it. I don't want to do it either. Right? I'm petulant just like you're petulant, right? And so give them that opportunity to see the full range of you. And I think that builds in them some, like, oh, mama really is a person. Didn't think about that. You know, maybe I should talk to her different.
For sure. I'm so sorry that you lost both of your parents young. Neither of them were able to see you rise to where you are.
Yeah, no. My father died when he was 63. And my mother passed when she was 67. So, yeah, neither one of them.
I'm sorry about that. Has there anything that's been surprising to you about being a mother?
Everything. Like, you know, kids have their own opinion. Like, they are who they are from the beginning. I think when you hear a lot of kind of in the culture, in popular culture, you hear a lot of complaining from the parents of, like, tween and teen kids, right? Because their kids are starting to push against them and develop some independence and all that. And so you hear a lot of complaint about that in the air. But the truth is, your kids are who they are from the very beginning. You just weren't able to see it until they reached a certain point where they were able to, they felt comfortable pushing back against you. And that has been surprising. And even the ones who you think are like you are not like you at all. They are absolutely their own person. They don't, sometimes they take what you give them. Often they don't. I tell my kids, you know, if you just did what I said, your life would be so much easier. And they're like, why would I do what you say? I'm looking at your life. You don't, you know. So.
Well, they'd be in good shape following in your footsteps. But I understand how they feel. It's, even though my parents are probably right about a lot of things, it didn't make it easy to take their advice.
Right.
Even if looking back, I understand why maybe I should have.
Right. Exactly. In retrospect, they were right.
In retrospect, indeed they were. But not about everything.
Not about everything. Again, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Getting back to the theme of leadership being lonely and so much riding on your shoulders when you make a decision, we're not always right about things and sometimes we have regrets. Do you have any advice for how you manage emotions when you say or do anything you regret, either as a parent or in a professional context or anything like that?
Yeah. You gotta work on your rumination, right? You got to work on going back and revisiting those things that you feel like you did wrong. I'm not saying you shouldn't learn from them. I think one of the issues that we have in a lot of political leadership in this country is people refuse to admit they're wrong or that they have ever been wrong or that they could ever be wrong. Mm. So I'm not saying do something like that. Right. I'm not saying brush it off, but I'm saying, like, you can only make the decisions that you make with the information that you have at the time. Mm. And sometimes you have to give yourself grace for that. That doesn't mean you don't acknowledge that you made the wrong decision or that you could have done this a different way. But that you don't always kick yourself. You don't kick yourself when it turns out that you made a hard decision and it wasn't necessarily the best decision you could have made, or you didn't show up as your best self that day. And that if you make a mess, you clean up that mess. And that's hard. That's the hardest thing I've learned in my life is you're not going to always want to do that. You're not always going to do it. Right? But it does help to clean up behind yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I can see how it's so much harder in the political context because the part of us that wants to set things right and make amends and be clear in our communication, if you're a politician, it's thwarted by the other side that can't wait to tackle upon any vulnerability that's exposed. So that definitely complicates it.
Sure. And not just that, but everything you say is written down or recorded. So it lives forever.
Yeah, it's a nightmare. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And people get to reflect back to you. Well, you said such and such, and now do you still believe that thing? Or would you still do that thing? And so it's hard.
Yeah, absolutely. So given the difficulty of your job, you know, you really need support and friendships. What is the queer community like in North Carolina? Do you have queer friends there? Is there anything you could share about that community?
Yeah, I mean, I live in the Triangle. I live in Durham, which is a fairly diverse place. I have lots of friends of all stripes, I guess. I certainly do have queer friends. I think, though, what has been most sustaining to me since I have been in this position is that I also have like a small group of friends who are also doing the work that I do and understand, you know, kind of the particular weight of it.
You mean fellow prosecutors?
Yes.
Or
yeah.
Fellow politicians?
Yeah, well, mostly prosecutors, mostly women prosecutors who are about my age and about the same stage in life, you know, with their families and their careers, and for whom I don't have to give a whole bunch of expository stuff before I say I'm tired or this is getting on my nerves, or, you know, they get it. And that has been really super helpful to me. And then I have some longtime friends that I have known forever, ever, ever, who are completely unimpressed by any professional accomplishments I may have.
People who keep us humble, right?
Yeah, but who are invested in me as a human being and, you know, want to support me as a human being, and I appreciate them. So, but this work can be, you know, it's not just my work. I'm also at an age where, you know, I'm kind of middle age. My kids are grown up. You know, I come home. It's mostly the dogs at home.
What kind of dogs?
I say these are my children's dogs, but I've been stuck with them. So we've got three very small dogs. The big dog is only 14 pounds, but it's a Chihuahua, a Shih Tzu, and then the big one is what the old folks would call a Sooner, which is soon be one thing or another. So kind of a
like mutt?
A mixed breed.
That's cute.
And so it's, you know, I'm at a transition point in my own life, and I'm trying to take that in stride.
Absolutely. I have a question about managing women versus managing men. Mm-hmm. Because women, we can take things so personally sometimes. And I was wondering if you approach female employees energetically in a different way sometimes, or if you feel you need to, than male employees.
I don't do that anymore. I think that there have been times in my career where I've certainly approached men differently than I've approached women, just because...
To get through to them, almost.
Yeah, just to be like, hey, you don't get to walk over me. You know, I'm relatively short. I'm like probably the size of a middle schooler. So I don't have a whole bunch of, I'm not bringing a whole bunch of physical intimidation into a conversation with a man, right? So I have to bring some energetic power to it. And so I have... been practicing law 30 years. So I've definitely developed, I've been a courtroom lawyer. I've had to project my, lack of a better term, power across the room. And so I've gotten very good at doing that. And I try to do less of that now because I don't need to be the biggest person in the room for you to hear me. And especially when I have young women who work with me, I try to encourage them to, I know that they have to do it because I've been through it, but I don't want them to have to do it, right? I don't want them to have to create this. If you got a hard shell, fine, live into it. But I don't want you to be who you're not, right? There is value in all kinds of different personalities and different approaches. And so you don't have to come in trying to tear the house down to be noticed. So,
yeah, absolutely. And do you ever find that, well, you know what, I'll leave it at that. It was a great answer and I don't need to keep pushing on that. It's just my own trauma from, you know, feeling like I have a little bit of a harder time talking to women sometimes than men, just because I never know if they're going to get pissed at me or just energetically. I was always curious, speaking to other women, how they handle it, but it doesn't. Yeah. But I liked your answer. I'll let it stand.
Yeah, I think, well, I'll just say this. Can't be worried about people being pissed at you, because they're going to be pissed at you. It's not about you when they're pissed at you. It's about them. It's like you just said, you kept picking at that answer because it was about what you need, not so much about what I said, right? And so I think that's true in almost every interaction with people. If they're going to be pissed, they started out pissed. They're just using whatever you said to support them being pissed.
Absolutely. And I loved your answer, for the record. So are there any things that you just wish every woman could know?
Yeah, I wish every woman knew that she was enough. Like, that sounds trite, but it's so true. Like, you already have everything you need. You are born with it. It lives inside you. Sometimes it takes a while to mature, just like you took a while to mature. But whatever you need is in there. It's cooking. It's marinating. You got it. You have everything you need to do whatever it is that you need to do. And if you don't have it, you have what you need to find it.
I love that. We're enough.
Yep.
Do you want to talk about the race that you're in right now and what's coming up for you with that?
Sure, if you want to talk about it.
For sure, yeah. I absolutely do.
Okay. What do you want to know? What do you want to talk about it?
Well, this is an audience. They're people that probably aren't as familiar with North Carolina politics. Uh-huh. And you're running now. You're district attorney. You're running to be the state attorney general. It's really exciting.
Yes.
So, yeah, just share anything that speaks to you that you think women around the country and around the world would want to know about this race.
Yeah, so I am running to be the Attorney General of the state of North Carolina. I am the first Democratic woman to actually ever file to run for Attorney General, which is really interesting to me, being that women now make up 60% of law school graduates. Women of color are the fastest growing group of law school applicants and law school graduates. And the fact that, you know, for as long as there's been an attorney general in North Carolina, that person has only been a white guy. And that leaves out the richness of all of our lives as women, as people of color, you know, queer people, people from rural communities, people. It just, you know, that is a lot. That's a lot of North Carolina that we are leaving on the table when we only elect one kind of person. And so I am in this race, one, because I'm qualified to be in this race. I may be the most qualified person to ever run for it. I have literally everything the attorney general does, I've done in my career. So there's, you know, that's my soapbox. But also because we only have the really good conversations when we are at the table in those conversations. The same people are talking about the same things over and over again. We're never going to, you know, we don't get anywhere. If we keep doing what we've been doing, we keep getting what we've been getting. And so when we talk about reproductive freedom, we talk about voting rights, when we talk about just the basic human rights of everybody to exist, there needs to be somebody who actually believes in those basic rights at the table. And here in North Carolina, we stand a real risk of turning into the kind of place where pregnant people cannot make choices and their healthcare providers can't make choices. Families cannot make choices for their own children, where the state is trying to decide how your family lives its lives. And I don't believe in that. I don't believe that is the best course for us. And so I throw my hat in the ring and we will see what happens. But I'm out here talking to folks and talking about the community that we want to have, the state that we want to live in, where people in rural communities have access to health care and don't have their water poisoned by corporations, and where our seniors can answer the phone without getting Medicare scams and all these things. So
yes, please, to all of that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I hope you win. I mean, it's amazing either way, just seeing queer women taking these bold steps and taking swings at things, and I'm absolutely cheering for you. Is there anything else you can share that I haven't asked about that you think is important in the world?
No, I think you've asked about a lot.
Well, where can people go to learn more about you and follow what you're doing and support your campaigning?
You can, my website is www.satanadberry4nc.com. You can also follow me on all the socials with the same. And you can also Google me. Remember that song? You are probably young enough to remember Google Me Baby. I don't know if you remember that song.
I don't. I missed that one. It sounds hysterical.
It was hysterical. My oldest daughter used to like play it incessantly when she was a little kid. So, and you can find me on all the social platforms. And I'm not on TikTok, though.
That's good.
So don't go there looking for me. Although, I don't know if you'll find me there or not. Somebody might be talking about me. I don't know. But it won't be me. But, yeah. Yeah, and I just hope for people, you know, this was a good listen. And for you, a good interview.
Absolutely.
And that, that we added a little something to the world today.
I hope so, too. I'm so, so grateful for your time and for sharing the space with me. I know my audience is grateful, too. So thank you. And I hope you win.
Thank you. Have a great one.
Blessings. Thanks so much for listening. If you like this episode, please subscribe, share it with a friend, and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you want lesbian dating advice from me more often, follow me on Instagram at jordana.michelle. Also, don't forget that womenwantingwomen.com is packed with free resources that can help you build your confidence and have more success with dating. While you're there, you can book a one-on-one coaching session with me to get my personal support in finding the love you long for. Until next time, keep remembering that hot lesbians are everywhere, that love is real, and that the woman of your dreams is on her way into your life in perfect timing. And I'll catch you next time on Women Wanting Women.